following is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO and, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall. Episode 40 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Jason Bryant here with you. Today we're talking with a guy that knows John McGovern pretty well. Well, at least he knew him well enough to be coached under him at the University of Virginia. Jim Harshaw, our guest today, an All-American at the University of Virginia, former Division I head wrestling coach, now currently working in fundraising and administration at the University of Virginia. Jim, we've had you on the Mat Talk Podcast Network before, but welcome to your first edition of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast.
Yeah, it's good. This is when you know you made it. You know, you get on a short time podcast, and then, you know, you follow up with the World Wrestling Resource Podcast, and it's like, next up, you know, Joe Rogan will be calling me up for his podcast. So that's how it goes.
And you're a podcast nerd just like I am.
So. I am. I've got my own podcast, as you know, Success Through Failure. So, yeah, I'm a podcast guy.
And that's one thing we're going to touch on today is what you've learned from Success Through Failure as your podcast, and also using your background in administration and coaching to help the listeners of this program, whether they be high school coaches, college coaches, club coaches, you know, do things that you've learned how to do well, whether it be through your time running Riot Sports Marketing and using social media to leverage a fan base and whatnot. But let's just start with the podcast first, because this is a podcast. I do a podcast. Actually, I do 19 of them, and you do a podcast. So Success Through Failure, from a wrestling standpoint, let's first talk about what the basis of the show is and how it really evolved from initially starting as a wrestling show to what that's helped you learn from a wrestling mindset.
Yeah, you know, so it all started in fall of 2014 when I had an opportunity to do a TEDx talk in Charlottesville. And it's actually one of there's TEDx sort of events all over the world. There's like 7,000 or 8,000 of them by now. The Charlottesville one's in the top 1% of the biggest ones in the world. So I got to speak on the main stage in front of 1,000 people, streamed live, and I got to tell my story about success through failure as a wrestler. So for any of the coaches and wrestlers listening, I definitely recommend checking it out. I've had a ton of people tell me that they you know, show it to their team or they send it to their kids. I actually had the CEO of Trout Unlimited sent it to around the whole organization. And so it resonates with people. So it's about, you know, my trying to become an All-American at University of Virginia, Division I All-American, and I failed my freshman year, I failed my sophomore year, I failed my junior year, and here I am my senior year facing all this self-doubt. And actually, I failed in high school too, because my goal is to win a state championship in Pennsylvania. I didn't even get on the podium. And so I had just this sort of long run of failures throughout my whole career. And it was because of those failures that I was actually able to become an All-American, able to beat the fourth-ranked guy in the country in the All-American round at Nationals. And so, you know, we look at failure as a bad thing. It is. It's not obviously not what we're seeking out. But when we're able to gain perspective and look at all those failures and understand they are normal, that's the path to success. If we look at any successful person, anybody, and that's what I do on my podcast. I find the most successful people I can, billionaires, CEOs, astronauts, New York Times number one bestselling authors. And I interview them. We talk about their habits for success, but I always ask them, like, tell me about a time you failed and had the self-doubt, that overwhelming self-doubt that everybody has to deal with, and how you overcame that, because we don't realize that successful people deal with failure. So anyway, that's what the podcast is about. It really started with that TED Talk, and that sort of kicked everything off.
Now, as we look at things that you've learned from these interviews, You know, it started as a wrestling-based show, Wrestling with Greatness. Then it's you're getting your Wrestling with Success and Success Through Failure. It's evolved. It's morphed. It's pivoted in the world of marketing, that we like to use that term, companies and things pivot. But there is there something you've discovered with these non-wrestlers that have the mentality of a wrestler that they don't know it yet? It's things that you've learned from non-wrestling people that are like, yeah, we deal with that all the time, and you're able to share that with your listeners?
Yeah, you know, I think what it is wrestlers have this unbelievable tenacity. You know, we're just able to keep pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and just be persistent. So it really either reveals or develops that persistence that is required to find success through failure. Wrestlers aren't the only ones, but I think it's, obviously I'm biased, but I think it is the best sort of way to, again, either reveal it or develop it, or a little bit of both. But yeah, you find it in these successful people. Anybody who's ever achieved success, you find these traits in them. And that's what I'm able to reveal. And by the way, so for anyone looking for my TEDx talk, it's called Why I Teach My Children to Fail. You can find it on my website, jimharshawjr.com. But if you're looking for that.
Now, as we also move forward, you were kind of on the cutting edge with social media marketing with your previous company, Riot Sports Marketing. And when you look at the landscape of college and high school wrestling programs now, we see the NWCA and Coit Cooper working with the best of brand type of stuff. And, the social media promotion, the fight night, we've got, giveaways. Basically, every night, if done right, can be a promotions night for a home wrestling dual meet. What are some things that you learned in your experiences there that you see still ring true, and you see college and high school programs really going, yes, this, they're doing it right. This is how you should do it. We've got good numbers. We got butts in the seats. We're really making this sport a fan favorite.
Yeah. So you're referring to Riot Sports Marketing, which ultimately is a business of mine that failed. But it's fascinating. The one point that I learned, and I'll share that quickly, and then I'll move on to some of the things you're asking about. The one thing that I learned from that failure in that business that is, I created a solution for a problem that every coach told me they had, but I didn't create a solution that they wanted. That type that you have to find out. So for anyone who's in business or trying to sell anything, it's not just about solving a problem. It's about solving a problem in a way that people want it to be solved. And that was my big sort of lesson from that failure. And it's actually helped me quite a bit since then in other areas. But, when I was working with Riot, it was, the type of coaches that signed up for my program, for the software and for my programs were the uber energetic, high achieving coaches, who, guys like Mike Derone in Wisconsin, who are just, willing to try new things and think innovatively. And that's not every coach. That's the top 5% or something like that, or maybe smaller than that even. But the coaches who, you see that are successful, at building programs, whether it's high school programs or college programs, it's interesting. They have, and the NWCA talks a lot about this, that CEO mindset. They're great leaders. People think that because they were a good wrestler that they can be a good wrestling coach. Well, those two things are completely different. I mean, you look at the Bill Belichicks of the world. He wasn't some Hall of Fame football player, right? But he's a mastermind coach of the Patriots. So it has nothing to do with your ability to actually execute yourself, but you have to be able to teach and to lead human beings. The first book, I guess probably one of the first, or maybe the first business book that I ever read, is called The E-Myth. E stands for entrepreneurial myth. And this works, this is the same for coaching or any other industry. But the concept is, just because you are a good, just because you're a good cook, for example, it doesn't mean you can run a great restaurant. Just because you're, you're a good handy person, handyman, doesn't mean you can run a handyman company or start a contracting business. Totally different. Just because you're a great wrestler doesn't mean you can be a great wrestling coach. Totally different. It's about working in this book, The E-Method. Michael Gerber talks about working on your business rather than in your business. And I look back at my coaching career. I was the assistant at Virginia, and I was the head coach at Slippery Rock. And one of the things that I was doing at Slippery Rock when I was the head coach, it was promoting the program, getting more butts in the seats, getting more fans in the stands. And I was just me and a graduate assistant, and that's it, and a volunteer assistant. So, you know, that was pretty skeleton crew. But I was able to get two interns from the sports management program. They came in. I sort of told them all the things that I wanted to do to promote the program, and they did all these things. And then at the end of their internship, I had them document everything they did. I said, if you had to write up a document and hand it to a five-year-old and they had to be able to execute it next year, that's your final project. And they did that. And then when the new interns came the following year, I just gave them the document, gave them a little tutorial on it, and boom, they were off and running. And so I was able to work on my business, on the program, in developing a system. And then I could step out of that system, hand it to somebody else, and they could run it so I could focus on other things, on the fundraising or recruiting, et cetera. So those are the type of skills that I see the most successful coaches doing. They're not necessarily, you know, the Rob Coles of the world. They're, you know, Rob doesn't run most of the practices up at Cornell. He's like the mastermind behind the whole thing, you know. Nobody thought Cornell could be contending for a national championship, and look at where they're at. They've got an amazing standalone building, and they've contended several times, been in the running to win the whole freaking thing, you know. So those are the skill sets that I see that the successful coaches using and doing. It's straight from business. I just actually interviewed Dan Tudor for my podcast. Dan Tudor is a recruiting consultant for college coaches, but all he's doing is taking business skills, translating the words into sports, and he's helping college coaches to use sales tactics to recruit. And it's amazing. So it's the same thing. It's taking these business skills and applying them to the sport. Every coach I know, you want to teach a single leg and a double leg. I get it. That's fun. But that's not going to develop your program, because anybody can teach a single or a double.
When you look back at your time at Slippery Rock, and ultimately that program saw its demise, I believe, due to state funding issues. It wasn't just wrestling that got the boot there. But
yeah, a bunch of sports got cut. Yeah.
When you look at your experience now, do you think you could have done anything differently that may have kind of steered that ship away from that program being cut and the other sports being cut, based on which,
yeah,
you know, it's,
man,
hindsight's always 20/20, right?
Yeah, it's a great question. Nobody's ever asked me that before. So it didn't get cut when I was there. It actually got cut several years after I had left. But what could I have done? Man, that's a great – what could I have done differently?
Yeah, because let's give people the background.
I can't pinpoint anything in particular. Yeah,
because it's a Division II school in a Division I wrestling program in what was then the East Region. And another thing, from a marketing standpoint, the school didn't even have a mascot. It was just Slippery Rock, the Rock.
It's just the rock, right?
So marketing a rock is like the pet rock in the 70s.
Somehow the lion is the mascot. But there's like a lion mascot. I don't know. None of it really makes sense. But it was a great place. I loved my time at Slippery Rock. Loved the people from – really, really enjoyed my time there. I had an opportunity to come back to Charlottesville, so I did, Virginia. I'm actually originally from near Slippery Rock, from Pittsburgh area. But, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. That's a great question. So we had a donor, for example, who wanted to give us $100,000, which is a big, huge gift for Slippery Rock, you know. It's a big gift anyway, but, I mean, it's a really big gift at Slippery Rock. Well, our athletic director said, no, we can't accept it. Well, actually, he said, we'll take it, but half of it has to go to women's sports. And our suggestion with the donor was, well, instead of, he's like, no, I'm not going to give half of my money to some other sport. He's like, I want this to go to wrestling. Well, our AAD said, can't do it. Sorry. It'll put us out of compliance with Title IX. It's like, well, why don't you just use that as a challenge and do a matching gift? So we're going to raise $100,000 for women's sports. And it's going to be matched with this other gift for wrestling. So there was some, I think, short-sightedness on the administration's part. I guess looking back, what could I have done? We had such a great, well-organized alumni base. They were connected. We were raising a lot of money.
Even after you left, Derek Del Porto was doing a good job. I mean, that was
right.
They put a lot of guys in that very last year they were a team. I mean, I think some of that may have been the emotion, but they were a competitive. I wouldn't say they're
they beat two top 25 teams that year.
Yeah, I mean, they're not sitting there going to challenge the top 10, but there was a competitive team, and it was in a favorable qualifying situation too.
Very much so. Very much. I look at that as a program where it really. I don't know that there were any things were. I think you look at a Duquesne, for example, and that was a program who didn't have a really well-organized alumni base that was supporting it. I don't know that, you know, you look at Slippery Rock, you had a quality head coach in Derek Del Porto who was an alum, who was well-connected. That was a program that I don't know that there was a whole lot you could do. You had an athletic director who just really didn't have, I guess in some ways, the thing that probably could have been done more was educating the athletic director on the value of wrestling, because you can't say it wasn't my fault, it wasn't Derek's fault, it wasn't the alumni's fault. You have to like accept some of that for not educating the athletic director. It was a failure in educating the athletic director in the value of the program. That would have been it was a tough sell to an individual who really didn't just really didn't get it, you know. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think we could go down a rabbit hole in there, but we're focusing on the resources, and this is also giving me a reason to bring Jim on to one of the other various shows on the Matt Talk Podcast Network. And also, just a little programming note as we interject here. This episode, this show, the World Wrestling Resource Podcast, we got a new domain name for it. So you go to WWRpodcast.com. That'll take you to everything archive shows. Of course, the main website is worldwrestlingresource.com. But for this show, you can update all your browser links because I got rid of that subdomain and now it's just WWRpodcast.com. So a little bit of a programming note. Now, Jim, when it comes to your role at University of Virginia, we know that you're in fundraising. You know you've got to raise a lot of money, and we've talked about the cost of attendance on the episode of the Short Time Wrestling Podcast, yeah, which people can go back and listen to at matttalkonline.com. But what are some things that you've learned about your time in administration and the fundraising role that not just college coaches or club coaches or high school coaches, but just any coach can really use and adapt and say, I can apply this to my program when I need to raise money? Because a lot of people don't like to give money, especially wrestling people. We're notoriously tight. But, you know, what's some things you've learned about the college athletics giving and receiving world that wrestling can apply to itself?
So first, I will say this. In the wrestling world, we all sort of feel like it's us against the world, right? We feel like we are the only sort of targeted sport, and that nobody gets us and nobody understands us, and they're always trying to cut our sport. And it's not. It's not that. So I work in athletics now, and in higher administration, and it's, you know, I have a broader perspective of things. And it is not just wrestling. It is, there are so many Olympic sports that are sort of, you know, it's not, target's not the right word, but that are sort of, you know, underfunded, want more, need more, and have every right and deserve more. But the resources just oftentimes aren't there because they're invested in football and basketball. And to be honest, I now look at football and basketball and money that's put towards those sports as a true investment in wrestling and everything else. They truly and honestly are, because those, especially in college, especially Division I, that's they pay the bills. Football pays the bills. Period. So anything we invest in football and the success of football is an investment in every other sport. So that's first, is to say, I really want wrestling people to realize that it's not just us. You know, don't have a chip on your shoulder about wrestling getting screwed. And it's there's a lot of sports out there that are struggling and want more funding and want more resources and more promotion and more marketing. So that's one. But I would here's another one before I get into the real key to your question there. Another one is I'm always a proponent. Any chance I get to speak out against the singlet and changing the singlet, I will, because I don't care about what the singlet looks like. You don't care about what the singlet looks like. That has no bearing on my opinion, because my opinion is not about what you or I care about. Jason, you and I are going to go to the national championships if they wore freaking tutus. You know what I mean? I could care less what the uniform is, but it's not about you and me. It's about the colleague of mine who just walked down the hall about 45 minutes ago, and we were talking, and she's a wrestling fan. She's actually a wrestling fan. She was at Penn State. She's big. We always talk wrestling. And she went off about the singlets and how bad they are and how embarrassing it's. And another colleague of mine, we've had a few opportunities to put wrestling into pictures of wrestlers into marketing materials of ours, and we couldn't find a picture that didn't show someone's package or didn't have some kind of awkward position. It's like, it's just the reality of the singlet, right? So I think we need to get past it. Oh, and I just had a friend of mine, her son is in eighth grade. He wants to go out for wrestling, but he won't wear a singlet. So those cases are out there. The kid who doesn't care about the rest of the singlet, he doesn't care about what any uniform. So why not change it and get a larger slice of the pie of people who would be willing to watch and to participate. So anyway, I'll get off my soapbox about the singlet. But here's the biggest key that coaches need to do to continue to, for the health of their own program, is to educate and engage. So what I do at the highest level, and I raise, millions of dollars, we educate and engage, right? We educate and engage our fan base. Why? Because we want them to buy tickets. We want them to donate money. That's why we do it. We don't do it just because it's a nice, fun thing to do. It's a business proposition. So it's the same, in my high school back in Pennsylvania, I'm always urging them, Seneca Valley, we have a great coach doing a great job of this. He's starting to email us and really engage with us. But I always tell people, like, if I was to donate $100, for example, to my college program versus my high school program, the $100 is going to go much further in my high school program. I need to be educated. I need to be engaged. They're 300 miles away. And the more you can get people educated and engaged, the more willing they are going to be to send you money, right? But you have to ask for it. You have to educate them, engage them, build the relationship, and then ask. Have the guts to actually ask for money. Hey, listen, we're raising money for this. We'd love to have your participation. Simple as that. Getting the word out, asking multiple times, asking in person. If you're nervous about it, Google, look up how to ask for money, how to ask for donations, look for different scripts, because we all know, if we had more money, we could do, buy more uniforms or do more marketing or go to more camps or whatever the case might be. Educate and engage, whether it's through social media, the easiest thing is get an email list. Every time you talk to an alum or a fan, grab their email, plunk it on your list, send them a weekly update. Doesn't have to be a pretty newsletter with links and graphics and everything. Just send them an email. Could be a paragraph, could be five paragraphs. Educate and engage. They're going to show up. They're going to buy tickets. They're going to make donations.
Yeah, let me touch on that email list right now. And I am somebody who is, I like to have inbox zero from a preparation standpoint, from just a workflow standpoint. So when I see that, I use a Mac. So I got that little red circle that says I got this many emails. Or those of you who use Outlook, you got that inbox that has the blue number beside it. I like that to be clear, empty, everything. So I'm like almost anal retentive about simply replying to an email as soon as I get it. Now, I get email lists, and I think I was on like 300 of them. I found something to unsubscribe me from the ones that I didn't need to be on, but I stay on all the wrestling ones. Just today, I got one from Harvard. Got one from Brown. I got one from Wesleyan, which is coincidentally the alma mater of one Bill Belichick, who you mentioned earlier. Yeah. I got one from Old Dominion. I probably get 10, 15 of these a week from various schools in different divisions. And here's the thing. It's not just the Division I schools that are doing this. I know Drew Black at Wesleyan, I've been on his list for years. I have zero tie to the program. So, and the second thing is, if you want to ask for money, Sally Struthers has that correspondence school. If you remember the commercials from the 80s, you want to make more money? Sure, we all do. You can meet your TV VCR, accounting, bookkeeping, child daycare. I just wanted to get that joke in there as soon as you said how to ask for money. But
you said it in well. That's nice.
Yeah, or you can get your degree. You can major in TV VCR or accounting. It's like, I just remember this word. Back on the rails. Let's get back on the train here when it comes to other resources that you found that say working with kids now, and we can go down the singlet train for as long as we're till we're blue in the face. I think there should be options at the younger levels, and I think we've discussed that ad nauseum on the other show. But when you're talking about getting kids out for wrestling, and we talk about retention rates, and we talk, not from just a college level, but every level, retention is an issue. What are some things that you learned that you feel that the sport itself should use as a resource to maintain retention rates, whether it be from the little kids all the way up to being a college coach?
Gosh, I look at Steve Garland, the head coach at Virginia. He's had very little attrition from his roster. Just very few guys quit the team. And it's because he does such a good job of making everybody feel important. And this is any great leader, right? Any successful leader makes people feel important. You know, people talk to like successful high profile politicians, and like you talk to them for like a minute and you walk away and go, man, he just like charismatic and really makes you feel like you're the most important person in the room. Well, that's what a good leader does, and that's what a good coach should do, is make the kids who aren't getting the little taste of glory that there is in the sport of wrestling, that they should make them feel important, make them feel valued as part of the program. But also rewarding effort. You know what I mean? We don't just, you shouldn't just be rewarding winning the championship or being the most improved or the best wrestler on the team. Like, reward effort. You know, there's guys on the team, I can think of guys that I coach, who just work their tail off, work so hard, they set an example, but they were never going to be, I mean, gosh, some of them were never going to be a starter even, you know, and let alone an All-American or national champion. And, you know, recognizing the effort, you know, whether it's the youth level on up, and I always talk to our youth guys that I coach now, and I always try to recognize somebody at the end of practice and say, like, you know, did you guys see how so-and-so, you know, every time we broke to go practice a move, he was the first one doing it, or these two guys, this pair was, they were the first guys doing it, you know, and usually those are the best two guys in the room. So you go, okay, you know, wonder why they're so good. You know, it's because of the effort. So anybody can do effort, right? Anybody can execute that. So, you know, rewarding effort, and making everybody feel important. Those are two big things that I see successful programs doing.
When we look at the health of college wrestling, and there's so much of this sport focuses on, and let's look at the numbers here. It's about 20%, 20-25% of college wrestling is Division I. We've got almost 400 teams, and that's including, not including the clubs, the NCAA and those type of programs, but we've got, 30-something women's programs now. We've got over 100 in Division III. The D1 is not the biggest division. We've got 77 schools there. That, and we look at those 77, about 50 of them really control the lion's share of the coverage across, whether it be the media, the social media, the people's chatter on the message boards, when there's 400 teams that we could be embracing. Do you think it's a mindset shift that people only want to pay attention to the best, so we need to support the best? Should it be top down, or should it be grassroots in terms of how to grow and really promote and market the sport?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's you look at the NFL. The best teams are getting the lion's share of the marketing. You know, it's just a fact of life. You know, it's just the best teams are always going to get the most sort of coverage, and or even where the stories are. Right now, Iowa State, who is not not very good in terms of their winning percentage, but like they're getting a lot of coverage right now. Why? Well, because of two reasons. They got a new head, fired. You know, their prior coach Kevin Jackson resigned, and Kevin Dresser is now the new head coach. Pat Downey is creating waves, and so it's a matter of the stories. You know, it's people are just going to follow where the stories are. Where, you know, whether it's the best program or the worst program, or whatever the story is. It's a Johnny Manziel at Cleveland. People are going to follow Cleveland. They're a terrible team. So it's you know, what are the stories? What's interesting? And every program has interesting stuff. So if you're the Division III program, I don't know, Drew Black, you mentioned, he's sending this email. He's finding interesting things in his program. And guess what? There are certain people who care about that. And here's the other thing, Jason, and I'm preaching to the choir with you because you're a journalist. It is so easy to get media coverage. It is so easy to get media coverage. Wrestling people complain about, I can't get media coverage, nobody cares. Pick up the phone. I learned this from my dad. My dad, construction worker, never went to college. He's just a hard worker. And when I was a kid, every time I won a tournament, he would pick up the phone and go, my son is the greatest thing since sliced bread. You should do an article on him. And they go, well, what did he just win? Well, he just won this big tournament. And guess what? My picture would be in the freaking paper. I mean, these journalists have to find something to write about every single day. Find the story. Send it to them. You know, a couple years ago, a bunch of the assistant wrestling coaches at UVA all had babies within like 2 months of each other.
They were all girls, right?
They're all girls. Yes, exactly. And there was all four coaches and me. I was a sort of the club coach at the time, and but we all had girls at the same time. And I called up the local family magazine, and they did an article. I'm like, hey, we got a bunch of coaches that had girls. They're like, oh, awesome! What a great story. We'll put your picture in. We'll do an article, and a bunch of people saw wrestling and read about wrestling in the local moms magazine. Pretty good. But it's so easy. It's so easy to get. Just all you got to do is this: look up the phone numbers for all the sports editors on the local TV and media outlets, TV, newspaper, radio. Look up the sports people. Write down their phone number and their email. Put it on a document. Save it. And anytime you have something interesting, shoot them all an email or shoot them a phone call. I mean, it's that easy. I guarantee you more than 50% of the time you will get coverage.
Yeah, and that even happens with me. And I'm pretty dialed into a lot of this stuff. So even with one of the shows that I produce here on this network, the Division III show, I had the assistant coach at York College in Pennsylvania, a school I'm familiar with. And all of a sudden, their assistant coach calls me and says, hey, this is an interesting story with our head coach, Dwayne Bastris. And he went and explained it to me. And I'm like, wow, that's good. So we went and he went and explained how this was like his first year, because there was something came up where he was the interim coach. And then there was a hazing issue that they had to fight through. Then he became a full-time coach. I mean, there were so many different things that each year presented itself. And even though I know that Dwayne Bastris was a national champion at York and he's been the head coach there for a while, their assistant coach reaching out, and this place to your point about not just the parents but the coaches, call the media. I mean, I wouldn't have gotten that story if Corey King doesn't email me and say, hey, there's an interesting thing here about Dwayne Bastris. And that was another pitch. Johnston Wales, Lonnie Morris is a great story up in Providence. Again, sticking with the Division III angle, I had Lonnie on my radar. It was one of these things I wanted to do, and it was just when I got to it, assistant coach Brian Allen sends me an email. I was like, look, hey, we just won our 300th dual meet. This is our 20th year as a program. Boom. I mean, the story just kind of, you can always have it on your radar, but it was their initiative that put it in front of my plate to make it say that's more time sensitive. Like, yeah, this needs to go now. We can tell this story now. I want to tell that story later, but you know what? You've made it that much more important now. So that's a good lesson, folks, that Jim said here is don't be afraid to contact the media, because I'll even go back to another story. When I started Matt Talk Online in 1997, I was doing some work, just kind of the volunteer stuff with Wrestling USA Magazine. Well, every single week, Frank Lapoli, who was a wrestling promoter in Virginia, works with the Virginia Duels. His son was wrestling at Great Bridge High School. They were ranked in the top five in the country. Well, every week, almost to the point where it became repetitively painful, and my roommates knew he was going to call, but Frank Lapoli would call me with information and statistics about Great Bridge that worked on their national ranking and said, we have this 80% bonus victories, all this type of stuff. And you know what? I've got this information. I'm going to run it up the flagpole. I'm like, all right, Lanny Bryan at Wrestling USA, no relation. Hey, here's what's news coming from Virginia. So it ultimately plays for exposure. So if you're expecting the newspapers and the TV stations to do anything. Actually, Joe Baranek, I got to mention him at Old Dominion, for example, when he was at ODU. I know he's coached some at Army and at Virginia. I'm not sure if he was there with you at the same time, but
No, he wasn't, but I know Joe well.
But he's now an NAIA coach at St. Andrews down in North Carolina. And when Joe was an assistant at Old Dominion, he was calling Channel 10. He was calling Channel 3. And we were terrible at the time.
Joe's great at that.
I mean, Jeff Rusak was our guy. He was ranked fifth in the country. I mean, these dual meets were hideous. We had 50 Rusak, people at the field house. But guess what? The television stations were there. I mean, it's a dual meet against Campbell 15 years ago. You want to know how bad that dual meet was? It was bad. I mean, the story wasn't the two Olympians coaching on either side with Dave Auble and Gray Simons. It was about the 74-pounder wrestling a guy named Lance Nixon. So it's possible, even in a large metro area, Hampton, Newport News, Norfolk, Virginia Beach, to get one of your three TV stations, because most of the major markets have 3, 10, and 13 is what they were back home. Channel 10 came out to our matches quite frequently because of the work of guys like Joe Baranek did. So, again, that was a part-time assistant coach. And did everything for the program. So there's, we went on. Wow, that's a rabbit hole that could be a whole nother segment too, Jim.
It is, but it's so important because I mean, coaches, they complain about it. People complain like, oh, why did wrestling get covered? Pick up the freaking phone and do it. It's so easy to do. So I really encourage people to just try it. Again, like I said, it'll work 50% of the time, probably more.
Well, yeah, and there's another thing, too, is I get into these, and this is another rabbit hole. I mean, we've gotten so many rabbit holes, they're tunnels now. But I don't think that made a whole lot of sense. But let's look at the NCAA championships.
I would go with it.
Let's look at the NCAA championships, and I read this all the time. Well, they need to put it somewhere there. I was like, let's be honest here. The NCAA is not going to place a championship, whether it be a regional or a national event, in a place that does not want it. People can say, oh, yeah, you need to put it out west, put it in Phoenix, put it in Vegas. Like, if the CVB, the Visitors and Conventions Bureau, the Conventions and Visitors Bureau, however they, each locale says their title, if they don't bid on it, you don't get it. So it's not like the NCAA wants to just keep it in St. Louis or here. Phoenix is not, they're not bidding on it. Well, they're not going to get it. San Francisco, Portland, Denver, if these places that people think that would be great to have the NCAA championships, whether it be Division I, II, III, the NAIA, you've got to get your CVB involved. And how do a lot of those discussions happen? The phone call. Hey, you know, you never know who's connected in wrestling. Like Iowa City, Coralville, CVB wants the Olympic trials. They want the Big Tens. They want the World Cup. Because they not only is it a wrestling community, but they've got people saying, we want more events. So for those of you in the area that you want to host an event, get your CVB involved in trying to bring wrestling to your town, too. So that's another topic entirely. I just wanted to throw that in on the importance of phone calls.
Yep. Yeah, reach out to your journalists. Make their job easy. They'll love you.
I love when you make my job easy. And, Jim, you're doing that right now. Other things as far as resources that you've learned that maybe just the general sport of wrestling can take hold of? Because you're a thinker. You've been out there. You've pretty much marketed yourself as somebody that – you know, you not as a thought leader, but you also interview people that are also thought leaders in other walks of life. Anything you think that wrestling should adopt right now that you believe has been completely overlooked, whether it's marketing, whether it's coaching, whether it's promotion?
Yeah, I think the perspective I look at wrestling from now is we have to approach it as a business. You know, people get upset when people make a living or make a ton of money off of wrestling. I'm the opposite. I mean, I love the more people are making money off of our sport, the more those businesses are going to be vested in the health and livelihood in participation of the sport. So I think the more businesses, the more revenue that can be generated from wrestling, the better off, whether it's someone selling t-shirts or doing wrestling camps or running tournaments or whatever the case might be. I think we need to look at it from that perspective. And really, I think the single organizing theme of the sport needs to be about marketing. You know, that's why there are major sports who that is their single organizing focus and theme, and they're big time sports because of it. There's, you know, people give so many excuses about wrestling. Wrestling isn't popular because it's not a ball sport. You know, everybody wants football and basketball. Well, guess what? Like, MMA is pretty dang popular. So is NASCAR. You know, people, it's not a team sport. It's an individual sport. Well, it's like, there's a lot of individual sport. I mean, look at the Olympics. There's track and there's swimming and, you know, again, go back to MMA and tennis. I mean, there's all these sort of litany of excuses that people use. And it's like, no, wrestling can be just as popular as any other sport. It's not that it's, you know, people say, oh, wrestling's boring. It's like, boring, like baseball is boring. You know what I mean? So there's so many reasons why wrestling is just as good, if not better, than any other sport. So we can market it. It can be the biggest sport. It can it has so much potential. So it's a matter of first believing that, you know, stop using the excuses, and then second of all, approaching it with a business mindset. So I believe that the more we can use the CEO mindset, the more we can learn from business, you know, sales skills, marketing skills, leadership skills, management skills, fundraising skills. The more we can use those, and coaches can learn them, and volunteers with programs can learn and use those, the better off we're going to be. So it's not about teaching singles and doubles. Yeah, there are great technicians out there, and that's really helpful. But, you know, really when it comes down to it, there's tons and tons and tons of great clinic technicians across the country. But you know what? There are a much fewer, smaller number of great leaders, actual leaders who can build programs around the country. And that's where the true value comes. Those are the guys who are making the Kevin Dresser kind of money, just signed a $2.25 million 7-year contract. Those are the guys who are making the big money, providing the ton of value and growing the sport. So really, to me, it comes down to business principles.
Yeah, and you can find Jim's TED Talk or TEDx Talk, to be more specifically correct with the terminology, at jimharshawjr.com. Also a link to his podcast, Success Through Failure. Also social media information on Twitter, at Jim Harshaw. Other places they can find you, Jim, and if they want to reach out to you, those listening, and say, hey, they want to pick your brain maybe on some of the ideas that you've got here, whether it be from a fundraising situation or even youth coaching or your Division I coaching experience, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, shoot me an email, jim@jimharshawjr.com, just H-A-R-S-H-A-W-J-R, so, or just, you know, Google my name, you'll find my website, go to my website, shoot me a message on Twitter, whatever the case might be. Jason, can I take a minute and plug John McGovern?
Please do. Oh, this is
John
the perfect
McGovern
setup
was,
here.
So John McGovern, World Wrestling Resource. John was my assistant coach at Virginia. And before John came along, I didn't really know if I could be the best. You know, I didn't have the goal of being a national champion. John got into my head and convinced me that I could be a national champion. So my goals shot way up. And I remember one day, I learned how to believe at a high level from John. That's affected me every day. It's changed my mindset. I'm so thankful for the sport, for wrestling, for the University of Virginia, for investing and paying for him to be my assistant coach, for Lenny Bernstein, for hiring him. I remember John. I learned a work ethic from John, because John, I always was a hard worker, but when John came to me one day, he was still training, and he said, he was my coach, and he said, he's like, Jim, I need to get stronger. I think I'm going to, and he was jacked, by the way. And he's like, I think I'm going to start lifting instead of just once a day. I'm going to start lifting twice a day. I'm like, holy crap. This guy's like, okay, I got to step it up. You know, but I'm like, they're going to try to keep up with this guy. So he's that little voice in the back of my head that always makes me doubt my own doubt. And it makes me get rid of any excuses that I think I might have. So impressive dude. I'm so honored to be on this podcast and thankful that he's been a friend and a mentor of mine for a long time.
All right. Now you got to give us a funny story about McGovern and some of his quirks.
Well, I think my best story, and it's not that funny, is just when he kind of came to me and he's like, Jim, I think I'm going to start working out twice a day, or lifting twice a day. I'm just like, who does that? Like, who lifts? Like, you lift a few times a week, several times a week, and he's going to lift twice a day. Other stories about McGov, oh, man, I don't even know. I can't come up with one off the top of my head, but just a unique individual who is going to get you thinking at a higher level, at a different level, in a different way, and approaching problems from he's the kind of guy, you know, if John tells you to, or if someone tells John, hey, John, you got to go run through that wall, he's just going to go, okay, like shoulder first or head first? You know,
it's not going to be like, not like, okay, where, but like, no, okay, no, how do you want me to do that?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, I'll do it, but like, do you want me to punch through it or,
right.
Yeah.
No qualms about just going hard. So love the dude, love him.
Yeah, I'm sure John's going to hear this part of the show and be like, "Hey, Jay, can you take that part out?" No, John, we're leaving it here. But on behalf of John McGovern, Terry Brands, Dennis Hall, and our sponsor at Defense Soap, Jim Harshaw is our guest today here on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Again, remember, find all the resources you can think of, worldwrestlingresource.com.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.